Hi, it's Diane. It is December 3rd, and I'm here with the 8 o'clock at night group. I've got a funny voice, so ignore me. But so far, we have Kathleen and Stephen. We've got Paulette and her sister, Kathy. We've got Don, and we've got Brian and Stephanie. So we've got a full house tonight, and I'm really excited. So let's start with a check-in. Let's have everybody kind of go around and give a quick update and say at least one thing that you're celebrating tonight.
This is Stephanie, and last time we made an agreement to have a plan for Thanksgiving so that when we were at my parents' house, basically we agreed that we would let the kids use screen time whenever we felt like we needed we didn't feel like managing them and hang out with my parents. And so we did that up front, and it greatly reduced my stress level over the holidays.
Awesome.
Yeah, I bet my kids loved it because they could, watch as many stupid YouTube videos as they wanted.
Did you notice any downside to it, or was it just kind of one of those we resolved to kind of let it happen and move on after that?
I think just being conscious about are we going to break all the screen time rules rather than kind of just sliding into it is better. I still don't love having them have tons and tons and tons of screen time, but kind of when we agree up front that this is a vacation, trade-off, it's easier for me to deal with.
But I would ask that at a macro level, everybody got along. There's no drama. And I spent more time with the kids outdoors two of those 3 days. So I don't think it impeded them in any way.
Yeah, well, that was the other thing is that Brian really kept them busy outside, took them skiing, took them sledding, took them on a hike. They had a lot of screen time when they were sitting around, but they weren't sitting around very much.
And the thing that I like about what you said is that, you did it consciously and you made a choice and you did it with the goal of making the holiday go more smoothly and you were successful. And so I think that that's the piece is that if we choose to break our rules, it's very different than if we have a difficult time with a situation and we kind of throw up our hands and go, why do I bother? Or, this is never going to work. Why should I try kind of thing? So I'm glad you guys had such good success with it.
And I think for me, the big thing was Brian and I just talking about it up front and agreeing to it up front rather than sort of feeling it out along the way. Yeah.
Yeah, you had a solid strategy going into the holiday. That was awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
Who else wants to check in and celebrate something?
This is Kathleen.
And, go for it.
I know we missed the last call on shifting expectations. The last call that we did catch up on the work. But anyway, something that I'm feeling really excited about is this week I realized that how can our kids if I'm on my phone a lot, in the bedroom and all that stuff, how can I be telling our girls not to be like on their phones and watching their computer and videos in their room, And so I made sort of between Stephen and I, we decided to have like a docking station in the kitchen where at night, we have electronic free bedrooms. Like if they need to be on their computer or their phone, they can do it downstairs. But not upstairs when they're studying and sleeping. And so I set up this whole docking station and I was able to communicate it with Marina in particular, not in a make wrong way, but in a way listen, I've noticed that, this gets in the way, I think, of all of our sleep and everything. And so I've set this up and I know that you guys have a hard time not doing that behavior kind of thing. So I just thought that this would just be a good structure for us not to have to worry about that. So anyway, so we've been doing it for a few days now and it's awesome.
Awesome.
It's so great.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. That's great. No, I love that.
I see that
Sandy joined and somebody else. Who else joined?
This is Liz.
Oh, hey, Liz. How are you tonight?
Good. Thank you.
We're just doing our check-in. So we've got Stephen and Kathleen, Paulette and her sister Kathy, John, Stephen and Brian, Liz and Sandra. So it's quite a full house tonight. Who wants to check in next?
I will. My check-in is similar to what was said a little bit before regarding we took a 7-day road trip to Oklahoma with 13 hours of driving each way, and I think that's the first road trip ever with no meltdown at all, and that's
wow.
A big win for me.
Bad, bad. Awesome, awesome. Okay,
awesome.
Who else?
This is Paulette.
Go for it.
I'd like to celebrate that my husband and I left for 2 weeks in November for Australia, and we left our 18-year-old daughter alone for 2 weeks, and she didn't burn down the house, and she didn't kill the dog, and she got to school, and it went really great. I mean, she did really well. She fed herself, and she got to work on time, and she got to school on time, as far as I know. I know my sister Kathy here was checked on her, and she came over a few times, and her grandma checked on her, and we've got a lot more confidence in her that, hey, maybe she can make it on her own someday and get herself up and do things. So it was a really good check-in.
Awesome, awesome. That's so great, Paulette. Congratulations. Don, what about you? What are you celebrating tonight?
Yeah, that was pretty hard to find something because my son actually took a step backward. We've been working on his morning routine, and he's been tired a lot, so it's been harder for him to get up and out of the bed on time. But the one thing I did notice that he did take some initiative on is we're getting him ready to take SATs, and he actually started working on a book. Well, I've got him a book to do practice questions, and he actually started working on it before. Oh, I mean, one day when I didn't even say anything to him, I didn't have to say, "Hey, you need to start working on this." He was already doing it, so that was a good thing. We just need to.
That's a great initiative step. Congratulations! That's awesome.
Cool.
Liz, what about you? Check in for me.
Well, still trying to work at the homework, tackling projects and homework for him, which we're slowly, but it's getting there, but it's just kind of taking its slow pace. Where we find ourselves doing homework all the way even until 11 o'clock, sometimes 12 o'clock at night. So it's become very, very frustrating. But once he sees that it's been done, he feels okay, I'm not going to take long. And so he's trying to kind of take advantage of the time he has to finish his homework so that way it doesn't take him all the way until 11 o'clock.
Great. Well, and I think sometimes it's just when those things happen and they have those steps back, you know, sometimes just be in a mirror, not having any judgment, but just saying, wow, you were up really late. What was that like for you? And have them go, well, I loved it or I didn't love it. Then you can get them back into problem-solving mode without, you know, starting by saying, I can't believe you're up so late. This can't happen. You know. You just kind of get a sense of and get their buy-in by figuring out whether they feel like it worked or not. But it sounds like that's what you were able to do with.
Yes, somewhat. I mean, he missed an entire program of really fun thing. And because he didn't do that homework and he didn't finish, we told him, sorry, we have to cancel now. We can't go. And he kept saying, great, now I'm traumatized because I have to do my homework and I'm traumatized. I said, no, you're not traumatized. If you do it, maybe next activity you'll be able to go if you're done on time. So then the next day he figured, okay, let me do my homework. And he remembered, okay, I don't want to miss out on any fun, so let me do my homework. And so he finished it, he completed, and it's just, it's an ongoing thing. But, you know, he has to realize that if he doesn't finish that, he's not going to participate in any fun thing. So
the same thing goes in school. Well, it's nice that cause and effect actually did work for him. I want to put in a plug here because it doesn't always. And
yeah,
it sounds like in this instance it did. I don't want everybody to think, oh, wow, you know, cause and effect is going to work, because a lot of times it doesn't. But in this instance, I don't know whether it was that the, you know, the stars were aligned or whether the timing was just right. But it's great when that happens because it can be a really strong motivator, Liz.
Okay.
Sandra, what about you? How are things going? Sandy? Are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry. I have it on mute. I was talking to myself, I guess.
That never has happened to me before. Never, ever, no.
Yeah.
Do you go by Sandy? Let me ask, do you go by Sandy or Sandra? I want to make sure I call you the right thing.
Sandy. I'm in trouble when you call
Sandy.
Me Sandra.
Okay. I appreciate that. I'll change you in the spreadsheet so I don't do it again. Go ahead. How are things going?
We kind of took a step back, but I think the Thanksgiving and the holiday went really well, though. So I was pretty happy about that. I was ready to go. We took a little trip to my brother's and everything, but he was ready to go, you know, earlier than we were, and was, you know, great with everybody, really. And okay. So that went really well. So
I love how everybody's feeling like they can celebrate something tonight. I think this is awesome. And I love starting this way. It's so easy to get kind of bogged down with some of the stuff that doesn't go so right, because I know we all have it. But I love how you guys can take a minute and, you know, celebrate what's working, because it can help if we feel demotivated. That sometimes the best thing to do, it's a great we're going to talk about systems and structures today, but I was talking to a client today about negativity and about how if every time you notice, you know, that a negative thought comes, if you kind of try to balance it and replace it with one positive thought or a couple positive thoughts, it's kind of really kind of is a great muscle to exercise to kind of keep yourself focused on the positive, which is why I like to start with that. So thanks for celebrating with us today. I want to go back through and have everybody take aim. Mary Ann, I see that you just joined us. You want to do a quick check-in before we take aim?
Sure. I just actually got back from the emergency room with my husband, but things are okay now. So
oh, my
that's
word.
Good. And he has an abdominal adhesion, but he's been admitted, and I'm actually downstairs, and he's okay. He'll be okay. So that came in earlier today, and actually my son handled that relatively well, which is amazing. He really stepped up and was okay. So that's been really kind of nice. The holidays, though, went actually very well. Thanksgiving is always a hard time for my son. He's adopted, and that was around the time that he first came to our house. He's adopted older. So Thanksgivings are usually tough, and we had really worked hard on some things ahead of time, and he even said afterward, I think that's my first Thanksgiving without the police. I said, yes. So we were very excited.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it was, I know that sounds extreme, but it's true, and it was wonderful, and I was more happy that he noticed, because more recently he's having a hard time, you know, remembering the good things himself, and so the fact that he actually thought enough to think, hey, wait a minute, we went through the whole thing, and I didn't have a complete meltdown, so it was exciting, so that part's been going great.
Awesome, that's great. So I'm going to loop back just real quickly, and I would like, we've got a real full house tonight, so I don't know, Stephen and Kathleen and Kathy and Paulette and Brian and Stephanie. I know you guys are both together, and so let's just kind of let's be all aware of the fact that we've got a full house, and I want to hear from as many people as we can, but let's let's just try to balance that because we do have a good big group. So I'm going to ask the couples to kind of take a minute and talk with each other, maybe put us on mute and let us know and think about where you want to take aim as a couple. And then some of the folks who are not a couple, if you can, just let maybe Dawn, if you can go first and just let me know where you want to take aim tonight.
I'll be taking aim back on the his routine both morning and evening, because if I get part of his evening routine ties into his morning routine because wrestling season has started, and if he gets everything ready the night before, he's not rushing around in the morning with the other things that he has to do in the morning to get ready to get out of the house. So I'm going to take aim back on his morning and evening routines.
So, Dawn, you know, I'm going to challenge you to be more specific, because it feels like there's a lot of steps to the morning routine. Do you want to take aim specifically on the getting ready with some of the things the night before so that it can hopefully feed some of the morning stuff and start there?
Yes, because I think he was doing until the week before last, because last week he was sick and didn't even go to school last week. So before then, he had his mornings together where he was downstairs on time and ready to eat and get out of the house. So, yes, I think we will focus on the evening so that he's ready for the next morning.
Well, and here's the thing. If you get that back on a routine, and then you can maybe you have to tackle something else about the morning. But I think that if you can get back at least to the place where you were, it'll be a good place to kind of regroup and rebalance. Does that sound right?
Okay.
Cool.
Yes.
All right. Paulette, where
do you
want to take aim?
I am trying to figure out how I'm going to word this, but it's I want to work on how I can help Amanda with her homework, and not actually doing the homework, but asking her how I can help her by reminding her, like, do you have homework today? Or what do you have to do tonight? Or, you know, what is coming up? She ended up dropping a class, and that was too much for her, but she's forgetting assignments, and I just want to ask her how I can help her more and focus on
that. So can I rephrase it just a little bit?
Yes.
So it sounds like what you're looking for is some clarification on what a helpful role would be for you to play in supporting her on getting her homework done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Liz, where do you want to take aim?
I would say I have to say taking that myself I'm getting really I'm getting patient. I'm patient, but I am getting somehow the frustration starts to kick in on the tackling the homework and getting it done on time. And of course me staying up late and then early in the morning try to catch up with preparing and everything. It's becoming, I think he sees in me there's a frustration going on, and I don't know if he's reacting in a way that he's scared that I become angry, upset, and therefore he, you know, like literally tells himself, okay, I have to do it, I have to do it, I have to do it, I will do it, I will do it. Like he tells himself, like, I can't disappoint her, right? This is what I'm feeling, how I see him.
Let me pause you for just a second, Liz, because it sounds like what you want to take aim on is your reaction in those homework moments, because you think that that'll help open the door to kind of figuring out how to differently support him. Is that right?
Right.
Okay, great. Stephanie and Brian, where do you want to take aim? And make sure you don't have me on mute anymore, because I told you to mute me.
I know. Yeah, we were pushing the wrong button yet again.
Sorry.
So I think
So we were just talking about it quickly there. So last week you gave us some really good tools, you know, the victim versus reality, and I think, you know, focusing on that again is an important thing to not forget. That's more of the focus on in the taking aim. You know, we've been talking about Toby getting to bed and his reactions, and I think you had a good metaphor. He's not broken. He needs a new pair of glasses, and interestingly enough, yesterday we were with his
developmental pediatrician.
Yeah, who prescribed something to him to help him make decisions and to kind of think through consequences. For instance, you know, he tends to play his trumpet during the lecture portion of his music class. And he's done a couple other things where I think if he had the ability to slow his mind down and think through that, those consequences, he wouldn't make those mistakes. So, you know, I think taking aim on his bedtime is still there for us. We're not going to give that up, but it's also observing his behavior under these new medications and to see if we can help him to kind of slow down and make decisions a little better.
It's impulse control, so it's getting him to get to do his – he knows the model is, you know, think, stop, think, and act, but the stop and think part gets blown by a lot.
So it sounds like what you guys want to take aim on is how you can support him in putting in some of these impulse control structures.
Well, he's going to be trying a new medication, so I think we want to watch what happens, just be really observant about what happens and to try to see if it helps or, you know, what the impact is.
So maybe that's really the taking aim, is the observation of him on the medicine and then talking about it.
Yeah.
So we can create a corrective action plan.
Right. So we can decide, is this the right next step or not?
Okay. So what you're taking aim on is helping, is figuring out how to get him acclimated to the new medication and to evaluate whether it's a good fit or not.
Right.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Stephen and Kathleen.
Hi there. Yeah, Stephen and I were just talking about wanting to take aim on our shifting our expectations around Marina, so and her how she is socially with people. We had a visit from an old friend of hers, and arguably I would say this is one of her only friends. Like, she has one there and then one here. And anyway, she came over for a weekend, really just a day, and we found that, like, even in trying to prepare Marina for a visit like that, she is so awkward with her friend, and we found her just freaking out about a lot of stuff. And
can I interrupt you for a second, Kathleen?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Tell me what the challenge is that you want to take aim on.
Shifting our own expectations around what she is realistically capable of in managing herself in social situations, either with friends or with adults.
Okay, so what I'm hearing, maybe I'm misunderstanding, is that it sounds like you're taking aim on a strategy, and the strategy is shifting your expectation. So is the challenge that your expectations are not realistic, and so you want to reframe your expectations, or is the challenge around social skills and you want to take aim on the social skills?
I think it's the challenge is we need to shifting our expectations specifically in her social skills area.
Okay, great. All right, thanks for letting me clarify, because it's just sometimes when we take aim on a solution, we're not really addressing the problem. But what you're saying is that the issue is that you really feel like you've got expectations that are not lining up for you guys right now.
Yeah. Progress.
Okay. Great. Okay. Sandy, where do you want to take aim?
I think really about the medication. we had shifted to a medication, and it was working really, really well. And then for some reason, my son decided he didn't want to take it. And he hasn't really admitted to me yet he's not taking it, but I've called him on it a couple of times because there's no way he's taking it. He's very moody.
Yeah.
So it's, okay. I guess, just, it's really.
And how to get, how to support him into getting back into a routine with his medications?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Convince him. Yes. Yeah.
Marianne.
I'm going to take aim on helping my son get back to getting up by himself without my assistance.
Okay.
We lost that, so. And he's been late for school, and he's not happy about it. So I got to help him figure out the routine. Whatever he was doing is not working anymore. So I'll try to help him with that.
Okay, great. Did I get everybody to take aim? I think I did. Steven, yep, I did. Okay. So I am talking tonight about systems and structures. And it's always interesting to me. Tell me what page we are in the workbook, please, because I don't have mine open right now. 22. Okay, great. Thank you. And so, you know, systems and structures is the place that we all tend to jump to first, right? So it's we gotta have the solution, we gotta have the structure, we gotta have the system, and that's what everybody tells us that we need. And what we know from, you know, the work that we've done is that systems and structures are absolutely critical and important, but they don't work if they're not in the context of the other three critical response areas. So if you don't understand how the ADHD brain works and you aren't clear on what your child's executive function challenges are, it's hard to put the system and structure in place that works. If you aren't focused on parenting positively and putting your relationship with your child in the forefront, then it doesn't matter how many systems and structures you have. If you without a good, but the quote I love is, rules without relationship equals rebellion, right? And so if you don't have that relationship and you don't have that connection to your kid, it doesn't matter what your structure is. It's not going to go as far as it could be if you focus on the positive parenting as well. And then really realistic expectations, and I know that, you know, at least one of you guys was talking, Stephen and Kathleen were talking about the fact that they need to do some readjusting on their expectations. And so if you put a system and structure in place that's not realistic either for you or not realistic for your kids, then you're not going to be successful. And I know that, Jeremy and Elaine and I all tell stories about kind of our first stab at a system or a structure, and we all try this. It's like this big, giant Uber spreadsheet or a giant list of the rules or the, you know, points for this and points taken away for that, and we get all these great structures that we think are going to work, and then, you know, a day later or a week later, nobody knows what they're earning points for anything, and the system goes out the window because it's just too darn complex for everybody. So, you know, again, it's not, you know, there's millions and millions of systems and structures out there. There's checklists and binders and mnemonics and calendars and, you know, just kind of some of these reminder sorts of things that we use and some of the things that we've taught you. The 3-5 challenge is a structure. And, you know, the 3-1 ratio that we talked about under parenting positively is a system and a structure. And so there's lots and lots of those out there, but you want to make sure that you put them in the context of the other things. So, you know, systems and structures are designed to help with executive function deficits. So if your child, for example, has a difficult time with working memory, and, you know, a lot of times we notice that a little bit more when they're younger kids, and you send your kid upstairs and say, please go get your shoes and come back down. And 15 minutes later, they come down with a ball and a pair of socks. And it's because they have a working memory challenge. And so you might teach them to go upstairs saying, shoes, 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 all the way up the stairs as a way of triggering their working memory so that they remember by the time they get up there that that's what they're getting. Or like the cleanup song is another great structure that almost every school on the planet has put in place to help kids to realize right now all we're doing is cleaning up the room. And so it's really important to know that if your child has an executive function deficit, and 90-some percent of our kids do, that putting some kind of system and structure in place can really help them. Things like time management, because our kids have now and not now thinking, things like reminders and alarms and triggers and that sort of thing can be really great for time management. Activation as well, in terms of kind of getting started, that sort of thing. I have a friend, he's like almost 50, but and he's not ADHD, but, you know, when he leaves his house, every time he leaves his house, he says, keys, phone, coat, go. And that's what he says every day, and it's his way of remembering so he doesn't forget his phone or his keys or his coat on his way out the door. And it's just something like that that's a simple mnemonic that helps him to remember, and we all use them. But part of what is important with our kids is not just that we give them systems and structures to use, but we help them to understand why the system or the structure is important for them. So there's really kind of four things and an extra bonus that are really important when you're putting systems and structures in place. The first one is you need to have buy-in. And it's really important. So many times we tell our kids what the system and structure should be. We buy our kids a planner and say, here, track your assignments. Or we put the checklist up in the bathroom and we say, here's all the stuff you need to do before you go to bed at night. You know, you really, especially those of you who have older kids, teenagers, you want the system and structure to be their idea. You want to ask them, what do you think you could do that would make it easy for you to remember to bring your backpack with you when you get up, you know, when you come down in the morning? I'm making that up, right? But, you know, you're asking them and involving them and getting them involved. The second thing is you want to make it simple. You don't need the big, giant Uber reward chart because it's going to, you know, overwhelm you. It's going to overwhelm your kids, and you end up throwing it out the window. So you want to make it easy to follow in a system and structure, and you're going to always want to use your take aim and just really focus in on a system and structure that is just for one thing. So you don't want to have, you know, okay, you can get points in the morning for this, but if this doesn't happen, then you can lose the points or whatever. You know, it's like I always say, if you've got a reward system in place, if they earn the reward, you don't ever take it away again. They've earned the reward. You might have another consequence that's attached to something else, but you want to make sure that if they get a reward for something, you always follow through and do it. The third thing is flexibility. We all know that things that work with our kids once work with our kids once, and sometimes they work longer than that. But we need to know that there are going to be days that it's going to be hard for us to follow through, and there's going to be days that our systems aren't going to work for our kids. And so it's important to keep that in mind when we're setting it up. Also to know that our kids get bored. I mean, one of the things we know that motivates the ADHD brain is intrigue and novelty. And so if they've been doing the same mnemonic over and over and over again, you know, singing the toothbrush song is going to get boring at some point. And so you're going to want to make sure that you've got a couple other ideas in your pocket that to change it up or to work with your kids to come up with something else. And then the fourth thing is really to focus on the process to start and not the outcome. And so if your kid is doing a really good job using the structure, even if they aren't successful in getting the outcome that you're hoping the structure will help, make sure you're rewarding the progress. So if they're using the checklist and they're noticing the checklist, even just say, Mommy, I checked toothbrush, that's awesome. Even if you didn't get four other things done, don't forget to reward that they're using the process and getting involved in the process. So with that, lots of stuff on systems and structures, but I'm curious about what comes up for you guys as I share that.
This is Stephanie.
For me?
One of the things. Go ahead,
Stephanie.
I was going to say, one of the things that we find is that screen time works really well as a motivator, but it's really hard to follow that never take a reward away if you earn screen time for doing things and then, you know, later in the week you lose screen time for not doing the things you're supposed to do. I mean, like,
does that mean that we need to, like, I'm just kind of curious, like, how do we divide that up? Or do we just, I guess we need to play with that a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, I think that what you want to make sure is that you're not confusing your kids. And so one of the things I've recommended to families before is that they, you know, you can either do it two ways. You can either say they automatically get an hour of screen time, and if X, Y, and Z doesn't happen, then it goes away. Or you can set it up so that they earn screen time. And so it's kind of like you start with no screen time, but if you accomplish A, B, and C, or, you know, A, if you, I used to do this in the morning, just like if you were downstairs by 7:10, you get 30 minutes. If you're in my car by 7:35, you get 30 more minutes. So you get you at least get 30 minutes if you accomplish one or the other, you know, and you don't get it taken away. You still get 30. You just don't get 60. So there's ways to set it up. What you want to just make sure is that you're not confusing yourself and you're not confusing your kids. And you also really want to kind of come up with more than one thing that's motivating, because as much as screen time works, you know, sometimes we use screen time for a lot of different things. And
yeah,
it can get confusing. So don't end up tripping up yourself.
Yeah.
Other thoughts?
So we quite often end up in social skills conversations with Marina, and we'll just go over like the 3 to 5 things that randomly occurred that she just was not able to do, whether it's measuring her volume to the volume of others around her and her context, being able to wait for like appropriate pauses within a conversation rather than just to talk over and interrupt and ask for what she needs, or asking too many questions, and there are like 22 others. And for her, like we almost expect her to be able to do them all every mm-hmm. time within every conversation.
Yeah.
And
it's hard because you want them. You want her to do them all. So, Stephen, let me shortcut you. How could you use the structure of taking aim to help in this instance?
Right. So, one of the things I was thinking of is something that works really well for her are crazy mnemonics. Like, if the mnemonic is, you know, think before you say, you know, is it helpful, is it kind, is it whatever, like, that's almost too generic for her. Like, there's something I've always helped her study for, like, history tests and whatever, and whenever there's something that she doesn't understand, I'll come up with the most ridiculous mnemonic possible, like, to make her laugh, and when it's, you know, just completely off the wall, she won't be able to forget it. And there are ones like there are 10 years later that she'll still remember. So I'm like kind of taking aim with a structure to shift our expectations that she can do 22 of them, but to come up with like a five word one, whether it's, you know, modulate her volume, adapt to her schedule to others, be more generous, wait, write things down with it. And like, I'll come up with the most crazy way possible to represent that, to the point where she won't be able to think about it and not laugh, and then maybe she'll be able to practice it.
So, Stephen, is it a realistic expectation for her to tackle 5 of these at one time in a conversation?
I don't know.
And that's why I'm saying, so I really want you to play with this a little bit, because I really think that, you know, picking one at a time, and yes, you want her to be able to do all 28 of them, ideally, but, you know, will she be more successful if she starts with just voice modulation or just not interrupting or just, you know, whatever it is that she can do really well and say, okay, for the next 2 weeks, let's notice the other stuff, but let's not worry so much about the other stuff. And really focus in on one thing. And so I'd like you guys to kind of consider, you know, maybe the 3 of you could have that conversation and say, what is realistic? Maybe it's 2 that's realistic. But there's 2 pieces to this. One is what's realistic for her given her developmental level, and then number two is what's realistic for her to try to improve on at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Other thoughts? Are you guys all using systems and structures really well? Is it something that's hard for you? What do you notice?
This is Marianne. I think for me, because my son's older, the getting the buy-in and trying to be creative about both my ability to understand what buy-in looks like and and sort of balancing, you know, the helping him articulate what it is that he wants to come out of the situation is probably the most challenging for me, because that's probably because I have the least control over it. You know, I can't.
Right, exactly. You can't just put
you know,
it in place. So what does buy-in look like, Marianne?
Well, I guess it depends on the you know, the thing. But so for the sleeping piece, since that's what I've been that's been a problem that's reappeared. I have to wait to see if he thinks it's a problem. And he actually has mentioned that. He actually had mentioned that he, in fact, didn't like sitting in detention, and he didn't like missing an important band thing that he's now not allowed to go to because he didn't show up on time. So it's now getting in his way again. So it's hard to wait for that, because there's usually things that I think are important, you know, as he's and it's hard. I have other priorities, but they're not his, and so that's probably my hardest piece. So the first thing is getting some indication that he thinks whatever it is actually an issue.
That's hard because there's
brutal.
Lots of things that we think are issues.
And that's
really
our issues, by the way. I mean, other than safety issues, there are still some that are. It's difficult for me to. That's my own, you know, taking aim on myself. My own thing is that piece of letting some of more and more of that go. But anyway, so the big thing is first that he actually thinks it's a problem, because sometimes I come up with problems that I that are just irksome to me, but really he could care less. And if people are yelling at him about it, or if he's getting in trouble, or if he's, I don't know, struggling to get something done, but overall he's like, yeah, well, that's the way it is. it's tough for me. And then also the second part is that he's willing to even come up with some ideas about, sometimes he feels frustrated and he'll say that, but then I have to, you know, and that's that balance of I can make some suggestions or some ideas or try to help him think through what would make sense. But that's the next piece, is getting him to not only notice it's a problem or feel it's a problem for himself, but then be willing to at least come up with a couple of some input on that.
Yeah. Well, and it was interesting. I was talking to another client tonight about something similar. And, you know, it's like you start by saying, well, you know, what do you want to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
And they say, I don't know. Then you say, okay, well, think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they say, well, I still don't know. And then you say, well, I think you can figure something out. Why don't you come back and let's talk at dinner time and give me three ideas of something you might do. And that's a great, it's a coaching tool that I use all the time. It's like, you know, if you challenge someone to give you four things, then they'll at least come up with three. If you challenge somebody to give you one thing, then they have, you know, then they usually like, oh, I don't know, right? So you're gonna ask him questions, and I think that this is the thing I said earlier. It's like our tendency is to give our kids strategies instead of asking them what they might do and what might work for them. And particularly older kids, that's the you know, a shortcut to not getting a lot of buy-in. You really want to have them come up with the ideas themselves, if at all possible.
Right. Yeah, we had the medication issue recently, but that I have to say I just took it. I just said, well, as you know, you're not allowed to use the car when you're not taking medication regularly, so let me know how you're going to prove to me that you're taking medication regularly, and I'll get back to how I'm going to know when you get to use the car. And that did seem to... That piece was, you know, that's like a safety issue. I'm not going to wait for him to solve that problem. But the sleeping thing, yeah, it's sort of like, it would let me know when you come up with something that you want to try, and I can see if there's anything I can do to help you with that.
Right. Well, and the reality is that how he remembers to take his medication is up to him. You're
right.
Putting a boundary in place that says unless he does it, he doesn't have access to the car. And so it's you're not giving him a system for it. You're just putting up a boundary for yourself, which is a subtle difference.
I guess, yes.
Other thoughts?
I figured out a way to respond to your suggestion.
Okay.
Cool.
One that we could focus on that would work with the mnemonic is the Oreo method of giving feedback. Marina really struggles with being able to be kind and generous when she has something to offer. She just goes right at it like, you're a moron, or you're a liar, or whatever. And if we were to just focus on the Oreo method of communication, start with praise, be kind with what you ask people to build on, and end with praise. Like being able to talk about it in the method of a cookie is something that I could see her identifying with.
Great idea. I love that. And it's a great system and structure that we all should remember to use. So thanks for saying that, Stephen. All right. Other thoughts? The one thing I did want to just talk about briefly, and we do a whole session on this, is motivation. And I think you guys have danced around it, but it's really important that, part of getting buy-in is to make sure that our kids are motivated. And so, take a few minutes and read, read some of the articles on our website about motivation. And I know that that's an issue for a lot of people. If our kid is having a hard time getting buy-in for something, chances are that it's something that doesn't motivate them. And so you really want to look at, what are some of the things that do motivate them.
Can I talk about something real quick?
Sure, Kathleen.
I find that, I don't know, maybe it's just I'm reading about it so much, but I feel like I'm feeling like a lot of people, like this like younger generation, is got so much media stuff to like consume, so much Netflix and television, whatever, computer stuff, that I almost feel like there's an apathy towards being social, period. And so when you talk about, like, how to motivate them and stuff like that, that's interesting to me because, like, sometimes I just feel like our girls could just go all weekend with – I mean, they don't even, like, talk about seeing friends or anything. Like, they're just want to relax and, like, watch stuff on TV. So it's like – I don't know why.
What's coming up for me is for you to spend some time kind of going back and looking at what is it about being social that's important to you. You're probably honoring a value that you have and getting really clear about whether or not it's a value for her, for your girls. And if it's not, figuring out, okay, so here's something that's a value to me. It's not a value to them. Is it something that I'm going to put a rule around because it is so important to me and I want to make sure that they recognize the importance of it? Is it something that I want to try to solve a different way? Because, if I'm honest, my kids text constantly. Are they social? Do they have friends over? Not as often. But if they're connecting with other people via electronics, it's very different. But it still could potentially honor a value if that's what I'm trying to solve to. So take a step back and really look at what is it about this that's important to you, and then figure out if there's a different direction to solve it. Does that resonate?
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome. So I haven't really heard from Sandy or Liz or Dawn. Or Paulette? Anybody else? Any other thoughts on systems and structures and or questions about challenges that you've had with this?
I've tried to use a routine. And my problem is the consistency. And I try not
for
to make it difficult
for
because for me,
okay.
enforcing whatever system I try to put in place. Because we've talked before about the evening routine, having him have his bag packed, you know, unloading everything, the dirty workout gear, and packing the new things for the next day. We talked about that last school year, and here it is. You know, this is his fourth year doing this, and we still don't have it down. And part of that is my fault of being consistent and reminding him, hey, it's 8:45.
So, John, sure what gets in the way for you?
Any number of things. Distraction from watching television, taking the dog out, having him upstairs doing homework and not wanting to interrupt him while he's doing his homework, doing something with my husband. It's all over the map.
So the question is, if you were going to take aim on one thing instead of having, you know, rules and structures for a lot of different things, how could that make it easier
mm-hmm.
for you?
If I just pick one, I think I'd be more successful if I just picked one thing to focus on and stuck with that one thing instead of trying to worry about several different things.
I mean, and that's
just
the reality is we can
thing.
Only do so many things at once, and that's why we take aim, is because it does get overwhelming and it is difficult to be consistent. And it's like, I got to remember to remind him about this, and I got to remember to do that, and then I got to remember to do that.
Right.
And I'm tired, and I'm making dinner,
right.
And then the phone rings. I mean, it's just there's all kinds of things that happen. And so, you know, if you're focusing on one thing, so for example, checking in with him every 30 minutes when he's doing his homework, and I don't making that up, that may or may not be a structure that you use. But if you're focused on that, then, you know, then you might need a structure for yourself to help with a structure for him. So maybe you need to have an alarm on your phone that goes off every 29
right.
minutes or whatever, you know, but then you're not having to battle both sides of it by supporting yourself and on also trying to support him. And I just
right.
and
I
want to say that again out loud, because sometimes the systems and the structures are for us and sometimes they're for our kids. And so think about that. It's like if you want to help your kid create a system or a structure, do you need a structure for yourself to make sure that it happens? So any other kind of parting thoughts? I just looked up and realized what time it is. We need to move to our wrap up. But any other thoughts?
This is Liz, and yes, I definitely feel that what you just mentioned right now is that the overwhelming just feeling of having to remember and be on top, and on top that you have your responsibility of work, coming, rushing, getting prepared, food. And so you kind of lose that momentum of the consistency, and suddenly you find yourself going back instead of moving forward. And I felt that way. I think he's seen that as well, that suddenly there's no consistency, and therefore now he's kind of like wondering, okay, what's next? But then again, I feel sometimes that maybe he depends on me to continue that, reminding him of his routine, what he needs to do. And what I want is not to depend on me constantly. I want him to take aim and, you know.
Well, so let me shortcut you, Liz, because I think that's a really great point. I talk a lot about that, is that we want our kids to become independent, but we don't do a handoff. We just wake up one morning and go, why can't you do this yourself? And I'm not accusing you of doing that. But it happens so often where we scaffold and scaffold and scaffold, and then we're like, I'm tired of scaffolding. Here, take it. You should be old enough to do it on your own. Well, the reality is that if our kids, so here's the analogy I give. Imagine that your child was 6 months old and was put into a cast. and they got out of the cast when they were 19 months old. And somewhere between 6 months and 19 months, most kids learn how to walk. When your child's cast came off, you wouldn't expect them to be able to just get up and walk. You'd have to go through the process of teaching them how to walk still, even though they're old enough to be able to walk. And so it's the same thing with our kids, is that we need to be able to teach them to become more independent and take them through the steps of and hand off to them, okay, I've been doing this for you. I've been doing these reminders. What could you do instead to remind yourself, and how can I help you, instead of here, go do it yourself? And it's so easy to kind of just get exhausted of the whole thing and try to hand it off. Does that resonate for you, Liz?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I think that's what's been happening to me. I've gotten to a point where I'm just like, okay, that's it. I give up. I can't. I'm frustrated. I completely give up. Just let him fail the project he was supposed to do, and I'm not going to remind him anymore. And, you know, but then I realized, you know, I have to teach him how to do it. I haven't been doing a good job at doing that. So I definitely have to do that.
Yeah. No, and it's easy to lose sight of, because we're so busy helping our kids do the stuff that we're missing the part where we're teaching them how to remember to do the stuff, or how to become more independent doing the stuff. You know, it's just, there's lots of pieces to it. So thank you for that, Liz. So I want to move to our checkout here, because it's 9 o'clock. And there's 4 questions that we answer at the end of each call. Somebody tell me what page we're on, what page is the questions on for this chapter?
24.
Thank you very much. And the 4 questions are, what did you focus on tonight? What did you pay most attention to? What became clear? What aha did you have? What's a realistic action step for you to take? And how do you set yourself up for success? So take just a few minutes, and if you, you know, those of you who are couples, if you want to put us on mute and talk about it a little bit together. And I would love to hear ahas from everybody, and commitments from everybody in terms of what you're going to do moving forward.
My aha was being able to do one thing and be able to do one thing in a way that I can build on it. In terms of if I do the Oreo method, I can very easily adapt the Oreo method to talk about other things after she's mastered that one.
Great.
Yeah, and I think for me it's, you know, you suggested, you know, it's just like looking at, you know, what's of value to them. I mean, like really more checking in and asking questions about, like, what's important for her socially instead of making it about me and my values.
Cool. Paulette?
Remembering what to ask them, what do you think about it? I guess I like that. And then they don't know, because they usually don't know that. Giving them time to think about it, and then saying, come back with 4 things, and maybe they'll come back with 1. getting their buy-in and
that's,
motivators. I'm always in search of good motivators, but it's hard.
Yeah. So, Kathy, I'm going to call on you. I haven't called on you all night. I'm curious whether you had any ahas or your thoughts of the call tonight.
Well, there were some notes that I took and some things that I am taking away from it. My daughter is kind of on the other end of the spectrum. She's older. She's 17 and a half. And so I'm just trying to figure out how to go back and apply some of these things. Her ADHD is a recent diagnosis. So.
Cool.
You know, we'll piece it together, but it's a process. And she did just move
awesome.
Out a couple of weeks. So.
Okay, cool. Dawn?
Yeah. I don't know. I guess, I don't know. I'm at a loss right now. I guess the thing is I need to focus, the one thing I could focus on and pay most attention to was that I need to focus on just one thing and pay attention to just one thing and not try to do too many things at one time.
Awesome.
Sort of realistic.
Go ahead.
And a realistic action step for me to take would be to make, I think, some kind of reminder both for me and for him of what we need to do in the evening, that one thing we need to do in the evening to get ready for the next day.
Cool. Stephanie and Brian.
Mostly we focused on thinking about what structures we really have in place or used to have in place and which ones we really need. So, and kind of the clarity for me is something that's actually come up a couple times this week already. So this is maybe the hammer that needs me to work on it is that transition from me managing something to expecting them to manage it, of not just taking away the scaffolding and saying, good luck, I'm done, your turn, but really kind of teaching and transitioning with more thought. And then the action step that we agreed to take is we're going to really work on Toby's medication transition and observing and evaluating whether that's working. And I think I'm going to work on with my other non-ADHD yet still has many of his own issues kid to work on the time management of really trying to help him transition to managing more of his time. And I think that'll be a good practice for me since he's a little more skilled at some of these things. Practice for me to work on that with him. That'll make it easier for me to work on it with the kid for whom those things are more challenging.
Cool. Awesome. Liz.
Yes. Basically, asking more questions. That was, I think, that's an aha because I don't think I've been asking him questions of how it would work for him to help him remember, to help him complete his work. Ask questions and I guess teach him to be a little bit more independent. And the action I would have to do is basically, allow step by step, just the continuation of what we had before, what we were doing, the routine, the consistency, and hopefully that will bring us back to what we want to achieve. That's what I need to focus on.
Okay, cool. And let's see. Sandy.
Yes, I feel like I can ditto a couple things. People said just focusing in on one thing and asking a lot of questions. I've got to really work on that buy-in for kind of him to find out why he's stop medication, and really got to hit that buy-in in terms of, let's move forward and try to get back on it because life was a lot better, when we had it. So just focusing on that buy-in first.
Awesome. So what do you think is going to be an important step to making that happen?
That's a really good question. I think just really asking a lot of questions on it and just, how did you feel then? How did you feel now? When did you think things are going better? I think he is so worried about the long term, being hooked on it or, being stuck with it. I told him it might not be long term. We'll have to see.
Cool. Awesome. Marianne.
A reminder that getting buy-in is still one of my most difficult things for me to deal with, but the scaffolding and the reminding that even though I'm going back, that last discussion about the scaffolding was a good reminder that it's frustrating to return to something like sleep for the I don't even know how many times at different times, but I, you know, but that there's actually each time he needs a little less scaffolding, and so I just have to keep remembering that it's tempting to just say deal with it, but
yeah, sleep hygiene is a really really difficult issue. I mean, somebody said that the number one executive function that determines success in school is in college is our kids' ability to get themselves to sleep and get themselves up in the morning. And so we forget that it's a skill that we have to teach them. It's not something we can just wake up in the morning and expect that they can do it. It's
yeah.
a whole different thing. So
and reteach it at different stages.
And reteach it, yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So great call tonight, everybody. Thank you so much for your time. We're on again for PSS the week after next. There is a Lifeline call next week if you want to join us. And join us out on the forum if you have any questions or comments. I'd love to hear from you out there. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.